Welcome, everyone. I'm Mike.
I'm Michelle.
I'm Ben.
And I'm Ruben. And we're the host of the Four True Crime Idiots podcast. How's everyone?
Good.
Good. All right. What case are we covering today?
The Menendez brothers.
Ooh. Pretty, that's an old one, huh?
Yeah.
That one's kind of interesting.
Did you ever watch the movie? The TV movie that they did?
Was it Lifetime?
No. It might have been. I'm not going to be too sure. Apparently it was Lifetime. I got to Google that. It was, but I watched it. James Edward almost played the dad, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think. And what's her name? The one that was married to Al Pacino from the, what's her name? Beverly D'Angelo played the mom.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Let me Google it real quick.
I think I did watch it, but it's just so long ago.
Right?
It was a real Lifetime movie.
Must have been. Did Lifetime stop promoting you, Michelle, or something? Because
no.
You don't talk about them anymore.
What?
Lifetime?
Oh, yeah. No. Because I haven't noticed. We haven't talked about anything that has shown movies from there.
Did you?
I don't know. It might have been Lifetime. I don't know.
It was Pike. Broadcast.
Broadcast, ABC, CBS. But
movie.
Let me see who came out on it. I think if I'm not wrong, Courtney Love came out.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow. Oh, I guess it wasn't Edward James Olmos.
No.
No. But I swear to God, there was one.
Was it a Walmart version of him?
No. No. What was their dad's name?
I don't know.
Was it Jose or something?
Yeah, it's that guy who came out on The Shield that played the Benito Martinez.
The captain.
The captain.
Yeah.
Did you see that episode that what he was forced to do? That was gross, man. It was before the Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
And that Benito Martinez character, he'd be the captain. And on one, he was forced to go down on the guy. Because he was like, that was the only way he was allowing him to go. He was all like, I'll let you go because he had him hostage, but you have to do this. And he did it. And when he had to tell his wife was all like, look of disgust on her face. And she's like, and you did it? That was all like, oh, man. He did it. It's a good show, though.
No, I heard it was a good show.
It was a good show, but yeah, they made a movie about it. But I mean, was this before... When did this happen again? What year?
89.
89, wow.
I always thought it was in the 90s.
Me too.
Well, close. Practically.
Yeah.
Practically, close. But.
1989.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was in the 90s, though.
Close to there.
Well, by the time they got out of the court, you know, stuff like that.
So it was like.
It was 1990s already.
I remember more the 90s than I do the 80s.
Yeah.
Right? Me too.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit about like the 80s. Maybe more of the songs in the 80s.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the 90s, I
was too young to understand the 80s. The 90s were making a comeback.
Yeah, weird.
Right. What's next, the 2000s?
Yeah. I think so.
No, yeah, they did do a TV movie with him. That one I was telling about with that Benitez Martinez dude was in 2017. The one with Edward James Olmos and... Beverly D'Angelo was in 1994.
Yeah, it sounds more like...
Made for TV movie?
Yeah, it was a TV movie. Made for TV. This one was called Menendez. Like Killing in Beverly Hills.
All right, now let's move on to the Idiot Criminal Club.
Welcome to the Four True Crime Idiots podcast. Idiot Criminals Club. And here is today's Idiot Criminal Club inductee. Take it away, Mike.
Inmate climbed into ceiling. It didn't end well. Ohio inmate's prison escape plan foiled after ceiling gives away. By Gene Goodman, Newser staff posted February 21st, 2020. WOIO calls it a botched prison escape in Ohio that ended in embarrassing fashion. ABC7 calls it an epic fail, or should it be epic fall? It was all of these things for Jessica Boomershine, who was caught on surveillance camera determinedly trying to find her way out of a lounge-like area in Montgomery County Jail in Dayton. Both media outlets have a clip which shows Boomershine with other inmates casually watching, standing on a kiosk seat and looking up at the ceiling. She then drags a chair over, climbs atop the kiosk monitor, and apparently removes a ceiling tile. That part can't be seen on screen. She then hoists herself up and her legs disappear out of view. The ceiling apparently wasn't made to withstand escapees, however, and debris starts to fall just seconds later, followed by the ceiling completely giving away. leaving her legs dangling the ceiling and crashes down to the ground. A trash can breaking her head's fall. Moonshine now has escaped and vandalism charges tacked on the charges she already was facing, including kidnapping, felony assault, burglary, robbery, and grand theft related to an attack on an 85-year-old man, per ABC7.
She was trying to escape, but she fell down from the ceiling.
Oh my god. That's crazy.
That is funny. But like, she didn't think anyone was going to see her. Well, they did, right?
I don't think she thought it was going to come crashing down.
Well, did the other inmates help her, or they were just looking at her do it?
They didn't say they were helping. They just, I don't know.
Moonshine with other inmates casually watching.
Oh, they were watching.
They were just watching her like, if she goes and it helps, well then we're following suit. How far did she go before it cracked?
Didn't really see.
Right? Oh my goodness. I wonder how many times a day they get that kind of stuff.
Right.
With the inmates trying to escape. Have you heard about that one? I don't know where, but the guy escaped, put a message that he was gone. I guess the cops went in there, I guess, when they do their...
Their checkups.
Whatever. And I don't know where he made it, but he made a message in a sign saying that he was gone. He was gone. They found him eventually, right?
Yeah.
But he actually got out. I think he made, like, a tunnel or something. It was weird. I was like, what?
He had the time to write a message.
Enough.
See you later, suckers.
Later, I'm gone.
That was funny, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now let's move on to the case. The Menendez brothers.
Lyle and Eric's father, Jose Enrique Menendez, was born on May 6, 1944, in Havana, Cuba. At age 16, shortly after the start of the Cuban Revolution, he moved to the United States. Jose attended Southern Illinois University, where he met Mary Louise Kitty Anderson. They married in 1963 and moved to New York City, where Jose earned an accounting degree from Queens College.
What he did, he was an accountant?
Accounting degree. He earned an accounting degree. Yeah. For Queens College. Yeah.
He was.
He moved from Cuba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He went to school.
Yeah.
That was good for him.
So they started making a good life for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The couple's first son, Joseph Lau Menendez, who goes by his middle name, was born on January 10th, 1968. Kitty quit her teaching job after Lyle was born and the family moved to New Jersey, where Eric was born on November 27th, 1970. In Gloucester Township. In New Jersey, the family lived in Hopewell Township, and both brothers attended Princeton Day School. In 1986, Jose's career as a corporate executive took the family to Beverly Hills, California. The following year, Eric began attending high school at Beverly Hills High, where he earned average grades and displayed a remarkable talent for tennis, ranking 44th in the U.S. for 18 and under players.
Wow. So even they were like,
yeah,
they made a living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, moved to Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
90210.
Great show.
Great. Yeah, I guess.
My favorite.
Yeah.
I'm kidding, guys. I never watched it.
I did. I love it.
Liar.
Yeah, a little bit.
I know. I think that's Bubba Secret.
No.
Yeah, it is. You watch it.
No.
That late at night, when everyone's asleep, you want to know what's going on with Donna and them. Right? Wasn't there a grown and Donna in there?
I don't know. Never watched it.
Wasn't that the buildings there?
That was your show.
I forgot.
You forgot?
You yeah. used to
so you watched it.
You used to record it, Ben.
It's okay. I think it was everyone's guilty pleasure.
A little bit.
I never watched it.
I watched it off and on. Yeah. I would get into certain episodes that looked real good.
Uh-huh.
And then after a while, I was like, So their life was starting off pretty good. Having, you know, moving to Beverly Hills. Living their life, but all that's going to change on August 20th, 1989.
On the evening of August 20th, 1989, Jose and Kitty were sleeping on the couch in the den of their Beverly Hills mansion when Lyle and Eric entered the den carrying shotguns. Jose was shot in the back of the head with a Mossberg 12-gauge shotgun. Kitty was awakened by their shots and rose from the couch. She was shot in the leg and fell and then was shot several times in the arm, chest, and face, leaving her unrecognizable. Damn.
In the face?
In the face, too?
Wow.
But it's so funny because it was with her, with the dad, they only did it like one time. Yeah, because he was shot in the back of the head.
Oh, yeah.
And with her.
So I wonder if the anger was towards her?
More towards her than the dad, maybe?
I don't know. But she got it worse.
Well, yeah.
Maybe because she didn't die the first shot?
Well, they shot her in the leg.
Well, right? Yeah, they were... Yeah.
Yeah, that was like the first thing they did. They unless they...
Maybe aimed wrong.
Well, yeah.
They kept missing the kill shot.
There you go. Yeah, the overkill. They overkill.
Yeah, there you go.
And then they say when they do overkill that they it's more like...
Angry?
Anger, like they had a lot of anger towards that person.
Yeah. But jeez.
That sucks.
Mm-hmm.
When the brothers returned home later that night, Lyle called the police and shouted, "Someone killed my parents." When the police arrived, the brothers told them that the murders occurred while they were at a movie theater seeing Batman, and then they attended the annual Taste of L.A. Festival at Santa Monica Civic Auditorium. However, they did not order the brothers to undergo gunshot residue tests to find out whether they recently used a firearm, since at that time there was no clear evidence that suggested they might be involved.
They should have.
They should have.
Why did they do that?
Did they normally do that?
No. Nowadays they do, I think. You know, they're suspect.
Just to be just like, in case. Sure, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Hey, they want to see Batman.
The very first Batman.
That was a great movie.
That was an awesome movie. Yeah. That's one of the ones, that's the only Batman I can watch.
Whatever.
Again.
You really? Like the mm-hmm. Ben Affleck one?
The regular one?
The first one?
The first one?
Really?
The one with Michael Keaton?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's my favorite.
You're all over the Ben Affleck one?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was excited that he became Batman, but I couldn't really get into it. I tried to watch the Batman versus Superman one.
Mm-hmm.
I fell asleep, like, I don't know how many times watching it.
Come on, man.
I know, I'm sorry. I couldn't get into it. That
come
one,
on.
I love Henry Cavill, and I couldn't get into his Superman movie. I fell asleep on that one.
I did. The look of shame.
I'm like a minute away from firing you.
But I like him in The Witcher.
The Witcher's good.
Yeah. The Witcher's awesome. The Witcher's awesome. I like the way he's always looking like pissed off.
It's gonna suck when he leaves
though. I know. I don't know why they did that. Why did they do that? And then they apparently him from Superman.
Now
too.
I read he quit.
He quit?
Yeah. I don't know what happened there, but there. I always thought it was them that didn't want it, but it was him.
I think I heard that he did it because it was going to kind of coincide when he was going to play Superman again.
Oh.
And then that dude wind up firing him to get a younger version of him.
Yeah.
Man.
And so he can't get the Richard back?
He fit that character perfect.
Perfect, yeah. Like he did Superman.
Yeah, he did. He played Superman awesome.
Yeah.
I just couldn't get into the. I'm sorry, but I watched. Oh, but my favorite DC one is the one where they're all together. Was that one?
Justice League.
Justice League. When they're bringing him back, I love that one.
The Snyder Cut?
Yeah.
The original?
The Snyder Cut's like four hours long.
Yeah.
Yeah, we watched that at 10 o'clock at night one night. Yeah.
Why
I think we're doing a superhero movie marathon.
Oh.
And. We were watching that one.
Really
we watched the regular one and then that one.
Yeah. Which one do you like more?
Both, actually.
Which one do you like more? I want to test you.
I like the uncut one. Or the director's cut.
The Snyder cut?
Yeah.
Good choice.
Yes. I like when they bring him back, the Superman back, and he's fighting everyone.
Yeah. Okay, where were we?
In the months after the murders, the police connected the brothers' lavish spending to the murders of their parents.
I forgot they went on a shopping spree.
Morons.
They cleaned up the evidence real good. It seemed like it wasn't them, but hey.
There's a meme where they were at an LA Laker game.
Oh, yeah. It's like a basketball court, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're right behind.
Yeah.
And it was like
Mark Jackson?
I think so.
Mark Jackson's in the picture or something
like
that?
Yeah. That's right.
Uh-huh.
Idiots. They didn't think the cops were going to
think
look at that?
Me?
Yeah.
At least wait a while.
I know. They wait right away.
Lyle bought a Rolex watch, a Porsche Carrera, $132,000 townhouse in West Windsor, New Jersey, and Chuck Spring Street Cafe, a Buffalo Wing restaurant in Princeton, New Jersey.
Oh, damn.
He really went on a shopping spree.
He really went off.
Jeez.
He went and gone and bought himself a business.
I know.
Damn.
Eric hired a full-time tennis coach and competed in a series of tournaments in Israel. They eventually left the Beverly Hills mansion unoccupied, as they decided to live in adjoining condominiums in nearby Marina del Rey.
So the townhouse in West Windsor was, you just bought it for S&G's?
Yeah. Man, can you imagine having being filthy rich?
For real, man.
Get all that? Buy yourself a cafe?
I think I would buy my neighborhood.
I would pay them all.
You're right. A couple of streets down too.
Yeah. right here.
And tear them down.
Right.
Just a big old field.
Big old mansion.
Yeah.
For us. Barbecues.
Mm-hmm.
They also drove around Los Angeles in their deceased mother's Mercedes-Benz SL convertible, dined expensively, and went on overseas trips to the Caribbean and London. It is believed that they spent somewhere around $700,000 during the period between the murders and their arrests, but the suspicion of the brothers for their spending was later disputed by family members who stated that there was no changes in their spendings before and after the killings.
So they were always just big spenders, I guess, according to the family?
Yes, so.
But they weren't buying restaurants.
But they weren't buying restaurants or townhouses or S&Gs.
True.
Hey, so what? I wonder what happened to his Chuck Springs Street Cafe once he got arrested.
Probably closed down.
Yeah, probably closed. Well, I don't see a big thing about him riding around in the mom's car.
Well, no, not, right? Well, I mean, no, because, I mean, you know, it's his mom's car.
Yeah.
But I can see, well, I mean, I don't know. Are they, like, teenagers buying houses and stuff like that? I mean, I can see them not buying, like, stuff like that growing up, right?
Because yeah.
They're kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see, like, the watch, the, you know, yeah. The up-to-date tennis stuff, or the latest.
A coach.
The coach, you know.
But yeah, the car and the restaurant.
Yeah, like the cars and the restaurant.
Yep. That was a little bit too much.
Probably. That's probably what got them got.
You got suspicious.
During the early stages of the investigation, the police tried to narrow their search to suspects who had motives to kill Jose and Kitty. They also investigated potential mob leads, but nothing came out of them. As the investigation continued, the police believed that the brothers were most likely the perpetrators, since they had no obvious financial motives and were liberally spending money after the murders. In an attempt to get a confession from Eric, the police convinced Craig Signorelli, one of Eric's close friends from high school, and a tennis buddy to wear a wire while having lunch with him at a local beachfront restaurant. When Craig asked Eric if he killed his parents, Eric said no, but he eventually confessed to doing so with his psychologist, Jerome Ozil, who then told his mistress, Judalon Smith. Smith later broke up with Ozil and told the police about the brothers' involvement.
What? That's funny.
Right?
They're not supposed to tell anybody, aren't they? The therapist?
No, they're supposed to keep that.
Not
to
even
themselves.
Their person. Spouses, right?
Yeah. So but then, like, you know what, though? It happens.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it happens.
Eventually it happens. But you know what? I don't think they're supposed to say their names, though, or anything. Maybe, right. Like, oh, I had a client today who whatever.
Yeah, just not mention names?
Yeah, but not mention names. Well, I mean, either way.
I'm pretty sure it happens.
It happens. But I don't think you're supposed to be like the way this dude was. You would think
his
he
mistress?
Would go to the police.
Oh, he told his mistress.
I know. But why didn't he go to the police?
I don't think you can.
Well, he can. Yeah, he can.
Oh, that's right, he can.
No. I think they can if, like, to prevent something.
But
from happening.
Do you think if they killed, if they're capable to kill their parents, they're able to kill whoever?
Oh, yeah, but I think they can tell the cops if the guy said, I'm going to go kill someone tomorrow.
Oh,
I think that's when they can
say it.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think that's what I understand. Let me know if I'm wrong, people. And one more thing. I wonder why they thought it was a mob hit.
What, did they ever say anything about their dad being involved with the mob or knowing the mob?
Just
because, I mean, like, why would the
just
because
he was rich and Cuban?
But, I mean, they're the mob. They don't need to go after rich people.
Yeah.
Are they old?
Well, maybe they're old.
Lyle was arrested on March 8th, 1990, and Eric turned himself in 3 days later after returning to Los Angeles from Israel. Both were held without bail and separated from each other. In August 1990, Judge James Albrecht ruled that the tapes of conversations between Eric and Ozio were admissible evidence since Ozio stated that Lyle allegedly threatened him and violated doctor-patient privilege.
Oh, so that can happen?
Yeah,
I guess
like
so.
If they're threatened, they can. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it makes sense.
It's supposed to be like secret, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they thought the boys were into the mobs.
The mafia.
True. Maybe not so much the parents, but, you know,
since, but
some of these rich guys try to act like they're...
But I think you have to be Italian now. Don't you have to be Italian to be in the mafia?
I don't know, but you know
yeah.
What?
Right?
I didn't know.
Yeah.
Y'all into musicals, right? Or into the 50 music?
Business?
No.
No.
He's into musicals.
But y'all heard of the Jersey Boys, right? They sing Sherry Bay. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I heard that song.
So, I was watching the movie, and get this. The guy who was the mobster around that area, they were close to him. They didn't work for him or anything, but he would go and hear them sing and wherever, you know. so they became friends with him. But Joe Pesci introduced him to their songwriter.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Huh. I was like, what? That's pretty cool. Y'all need to watch it.
Maybe.
Jersey Boys. Jersey on Max. Boys.
No.
Watch it, Mike. DiCarlo. I think that was his name. The mobster guy.
No, DiCarlo?
Uh-huh. I think. That's pretty cool.
Ben will tell us how it is. No. Ben, tell us. Okay, I'll watch it.
How do you want me to tell you something I haven't seen?
Yes, well, we're going to watch it. Movie night before
we watch it
our
tonight.
Podcast next week. Movie day.
No.
Albrecht's ruling was appealed and the proceedings were then delayed for 2 years. The Supreme Court of California ruled in August 1992 that most of these tapes are admissible, excepting the tape in which Eric discussed the murders. After that decision, the Los Angeles County Grand Jury issued indictments in December 1992, charging the brothers with the murders of their parents.
So they didn't want to use the tapes?
I guess not.
They're admissible, but except for the one with... Talked about the murder.
Took 2 years? There was a delay for 2 years?
Yeah.
Jeez.
So in those 2 years, were they out or were they in jail?
Probably in jail.
Right?
I don't know. Actually, I don't know. I'm not sure.
I wouldn't trust him.
Since they didn't have like concrete evidence yet, other than that one tape.
Wait, did they have bail?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think so.
No.
I haven't heard anything about bail.
Both were held without bail.
Because I was going to say, if they were out on bail, then I'm pretty sure...
I wouldn't trust them. They have all the money in the world. And if they take the money away from them,
they can just fly out of the country.
Yep.
Well,
go to Israel.
Yeah. What's their ties over there in Israel?
Tennis.
So now we're going to get into the trials.
The Menendez case became a national sensation when Court TV broadcasted the trial in 1993. Represented by their defense lawyer, Leslie Abramson, the brothers stated that they were driven to murder by a lifetime of abuse at the hands of their parents, especially sexual abuse, by their father, who was described as a cruel, perfectionist, and pedophile.
Well, I think it was just a dad, but the mom didn't stop him.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's why they shot her so many times.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Because she could have stopped it, but she didn't.
She didn't do anything.
She tried to keep it hush.
Yeah.
But that's just them saying that, right?
Yeah, well, that's what they were saying. Because I think there was a lot of back and forth of denial on the parents to ever do that.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, their mother was described as an enabling, selfish, mentally unstable alcoholic and drug addict who encouraged her husband's behavior and was also sometimes violent towards the boys.
Maybe she didn't really, she didn't stop them from hurting them. And but she herself was, maybe she would throw things at him, hit him?
Dead?
She was in one of her alcoholic, I don't know.
What do you call that?
Stage where she's just where you black out.
Yeah.
But did they ever mention her trying anything on the brothers?
I don't think so.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The allegations against the couple were supported by their families, with multiple witnesses testifying. The brother's cousin, Andy Cano, said that as a child he was told by Eric about the sexual abuse, which they both described as penis massages. Diane Vandermolen, another cousin of the brothers, stated that she once told Kitty about Jose's molestation of Lyle, although Kitty told her that it was false.
So, I wonder if it was true, the molestations.
I don't think they would be making it up.
Right?
Yeah, no.
Not even an excuse to kill him?
No.
For financial?
Obviously, they were bringing it up before.
Right.
And to family members.
I mean, why would you go around saying something like that about your parents if it isn't true?
True.
You would really have to hate your parents to, spread some kind of...
Stuff like that?
Yeah.
It wasn't something they just brought up at the spur of the moment.
Yeah.
After the killing.
Right.
True.
Physical evidence was also provided by the defense, which included nude and sexual photographs showing Lyle and Eric's genitalia taken by their father when they were children. The prosecution argued, however, that the killings were done for financial gain. The financial gain theory had zero evidence to back it up, and was disputed by the defense team when they were proved that the brothers did not think they were getting any inheritance.
Oh. I'm starting to feel like it was true by the molestations.
I agree with you, though, because recently I had read somewhere that one of the members from Menudo, supposedly their father somehow managed them.
Uh-huh.
And he said that he himself, and I think maybe a couple of other members,
uh-huh,
that he did touch them inappropriately. Yeah, he's like, he just came out with it. I don't know if he's writing a book or anything, but
yeah,
I don't know why he wasn't. Well, I guess at that time he wasn't,
right.
I guess wasn't prepared to come out.
Right.
But he backed him up with that.
Yeah.
So maybe it is true.
But they could have gone a different way about getting justice besides killing him.
They took the law in their own hands.
They took it into their own
hands. Oh, yeah.
But maybe they just didn't feel like people were going to believe them. I mean, I guess people weren't believing them when they were saying anything.
That is true.
So
they got tired of it.
They just got tired of it. And maybe also for a little bit of financial gain also, because, I mean, if they decided just to cut off their parents.
Yeah, they're getting their money.
Their lifestyle that they're used to.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't going to be there.
Yeah, true.
Both, maybe.
Laos prosecutor Pam Bozanich argued that men cannot be raped because they lack the necessary equipment to be raped.
Okay. What?
I know. Like, for real?
Come on, Pam.
Get it together, Pam.
Eric's prosecutor, Lester Kariyama, suggested that Eric was homosexual and that the sexual abuse was actually consensual. A couple of weeks before the night of the killings, Eric testified that he told his brother about the sexual abuse he was experiencing, which then led to several confrontations within the family. They also testified that on many occasions their father threatened to kill them if they did not keep the abuse a secret. Around that time, the brothers found out that their parents were hiding rifles in their bedrooms, which led to them buying their own shotguns for protection.
Were they being sexually abused up to the point that they killed them?
I'm not sure about that. I haven't heard about that.
I don't know.
But
okay, Lyle was the one that was going around telling his cousins, right? When they were kids?
I believe so.
And Eric was just coming and telling his brother about it just recently, before all that? Kind of sounds like it, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that pushed Lyle over the edge too. Who came up with the plan, Eric or Lyle? Or was it both?
I'm not sure.
Maybe.
Good question.
Because right here where it says, where a couple of weeks before the night of the killings, Eric testified that he told his brother about the sexual abuse he was experiencing, which then leading to several confrontations within the family.
Yeah.
So maybe he didn't know that it was happening. But who was older, Eric or Lyle?
I think it was Lyle.
Lyle.
I think that's what it said in the beginning of the
film. Yeah, I think it was Lyle.
Lyle?
Yeah.
Got upset because it was happening to him, but now it was happening to his baby brother.
Yeah.
I can see.
But the prosecutor saying that he was homosexual?
Yeah.
Like, why would, even if that was the case, why would he do it with his dad? That's even a stupid prosecution.
Well, yeah. I'm gay. I'm going to have my dad sleep with me.
Yeah.
It's dumb. Like,
it makes no sense.
It doesn't.
No. And so, and then they bought their own guns?
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, they got their own guns?
Yeah.
So they didn't use their parents?
No.
Well, they knew their parents had their own guns. And dad has theirs. Had his guns. He went and bought. They went and bought their own.
They probably thought they were capable of killing them.
Yeah.
So they went and got their own guns and got them first.
The last confrontation happened inside the house then on August 20th, 1989, a few minutes before Kitty and Jose were killed. The brothers then stated that their father closed the den's door at the time, which was unusual. Paranoid and afraid that they would be killed by their own parents, Lau and Eric went outside of the house to load their shotguns. Eric stated, "As I went into the room, I just started firing."
So they're like paranoid?
They got real paranoid because they thought the guy was going to
do something to them.
Do something to them.
Because he closed the door?
Well, they said it was unusual for him to close the door.
Well, true, but
or that they panicked thinking that he was going to do something to them right then and there, sexually.
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to get at?
Yeah.
But was the mom there? Well, the mom was there, right?
Yeah, she was killed with the dad.
Was she drunk? But I would hate to think that he was going to do anything in front of the mom.
Right. Yeah.
Or maybe they thought that they closed the door so they're getting the guns ready or something.
Maybe. That's a little tidbit that's very interesting.
Right. It's kind of weird.
Why are you panicking that they're closing the den door?
Yeah.
Unless they did go and talk to someone about it now that they're older.
Mm-hmm.
And that person confronted the dad.
Well, maybe. They're going to talk. But why close the door?
Yeah. Did they lock the den door?
No, I don't think so. They just said they closed it. That is kind of weird. Yeah.
The trial ended with two deadlocked juries, and as a result, the Los Angeles County District Attorney, Gil Garcetti, announced immediately that the brothers would be retried. The second trial was somewhat less publicized, in part because Judge Stanley Weisberg did not allow cameras in the courtroom. During the second trial, Weisberg also did not allow much defense testimony about the sexual abuse claims and did not allow the jury to vote on manslaughter charges instead of murder charges.
I read an article on CBSNews.com that was posted in 2016, It said there was a new California law that stated defendants found guilty after being barred from using physical or sexual abuse as a defense may be allowed to appeal their convictions, and that can possibly lead to a new trial for them. That's interesting.
Hey, but in that new trial, can old evidence be used too?
I don't know about the old evidence. I'm pretty sure they might have. They might let them.
But, like, that picture didn't help their case because it wasn't, like...
Oh, well, they didn't allow them to use the evidence.
Oh.
Both brothers were eventually convicted on 2 counts of first-degree murder and a conspiracy to commit murder. In the penalty phase of the trial, they were sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. The jury said that the abuse defense was not a factor in its deliberations, but decided not to impose a death penalty because both brothers had no criminal record or history of violence prior to the killings.
Actually, I can see that.
Yeah.
But, like I said, I kind of feel for them because if it's true,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I don't know why the judge didn't allow manslaughter.
Right? It's like I feel for them because that's true what they were going through.
Yeah.
I think they were.
Yeah.
I think they were.
I kind of get why they did what they did, but they should have just done it a different way.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, they could have just pack up their stuff and just leave.
Yeah, leave. Don't have anything to do with the parents anymore.
Yeah, but unless they were worried about the dad tracking them down and...
That and
the financial situation. Like I said, you know, they would have to actually start working and...
On their own.
They'll have no money.
They're going to have to learn how to live within their means.
Yep.
It was something that they were not used to.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they figured they killed the parents. That way they get to keep the house. And then they have all that money.
Yeah.
And they can still live there.
And you don't have to worry about the abuse.
Yeah, the abuse and all that.
Yeah.
Sell the house and all that. You know what I'm trying to get at? And not live in it. But
like you said, they could have just moved away.
Yeah, but they could have just moved away.
Or they could have just gone to the authorities.
Yeah.
But that's why I'm wondering if it was going on even as they were older.
Right.
And that's why...
I don't know.
You know what I'm trying to get at?
I don't think he would have been able to do that when they were older.
They'd be able to defend themselves by then.
I mean, maybe. If they were that afraid of them by closing the den door...
That is true.
You know what I'm trying to
say?
That is true.
However, unlike the juries in the previous trials, the jury in the penalty phase rejected the defense's theory that the brothers killed their parents out of fear. Despite all the evidence and testimony, as it was believed that they committed the killings in order to inherit their family's wealth. During the penalty phase of the trial, Abramson, the brother's defense lawyer, apparently told a defense witness named William Vickery to edit his own notes, but the district attorney's office decided not to launch a criminal investigation on Abramson.
Okay, let's see.
Okay, well, what was going on with Abramson?
He told that witness to what? To edit his own notes?
Yeah.
Why would he do that?
I have no idea.
I don't know why they did that.
I wonder, so, like, if they didn't go on a spending spree, they wouldn't have been... They wouldn't have been, like, looked at?
Yeah, I think so. They did it wrong.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that's the way it sounds like. It sounds like, because as soon as they went on that spending spree, they started thinking, like, well...
They started looking at them.
Yeah.
Like your parents just died and you're over here buying townhouses and cafes.
And restaurants.
And Israel for tennis tournaments. Like, what's going on?
Yeah. Just.
So they went warned and just kind of like focus on the parents' death? Or was it just because they couldn't find anyone that would want to murder them?
What?
The parents.
Yeah.
The police couldn't find like anyone like suspects, right?
Oh, like BC. Yeah. No.
Not even like a. Well, because the house didn't look like it was broken into.
Yeah, right? But like, if you're not saying it's right, why would you make yourself look guilty after murdering your parents by going on a shopping spree?
That's the first thing they're going to notice.
Yeah.
Right?
Both brothers also filed motions for a mistrial, claiming that they suffered irreversible damage in the penalty phase as a result of possible misconduct and ineffective representation by Abramson. On July 2nd, 1996, Weisberg sentenced the brothers to life in prison without the possibility of parole, and also sentenced them to consecutive sentences for the killings and the charges of conspiracy to commit murder.
How old were they when they got arrested? They were still young. They were like 18, right? Lyle was 21 and Eric was 18. This was at LATimes.com.
Okay.
So they were adults. I thought they were younger.
I had always thought that Eric was 18. I remember him being still kind of young.
He was young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure about how Lyle was.
So, they murdered the parents, so they shouldn't expect to get off scot-free, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They deserve the sentence. I don't know. I'm still up in there with that.
How about what?
Their sentence.
Oh, okay. Like, if it was justified?
For life? I don't know.
You think
they should have just gotten, my own opinion, maybe like 50 years? They were, abused.
They were.
But
it was premeditated.
Yeah.
So that's why it was premeditated.
Yeah.
So if they would have done it while the abuse was happening at that moment, then it would have been like self-defense, right?
Yeah.
Kind of, in a way. Yeah.
This
is the premeditated, you're right, Ben. But still, I don't think they should have gotten life. That's just my opinion. We can have opinions.
50 years?
Yeah, well, not a few, but like 50. 50, yeah.
Well, yeah, because by the time they got out, they would have been like, what?
60 or so.
60 or something? Yeah, like 60, 70. Yeah.
That's just me.
I guess maybe they were worried that they might try to do it again.
But I don't think they would have done it again.
I think it was a one-time thing.
Yeah. They really wanted...
That's if the allegations were true.
Yeah.
About the molestations and all that.
Until this day, it's still up in the air if it's true or not,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had multiple family members, and then they had the pictures. I think it's true.
Yeah.
I think it happened, yeah. So we're done talking about the trial, so now we're going to talk about their incarceration.
As in their pretrial detention, the California Department of Corrections separated the brothers and sent them to different prisons. Since they were considered to be maximum security inmates, they are segregated from other prisoners. They remained in separate prisons until February 2018, when Lyle was moved from Mule Creek State Prison in Northern California to the Richard J. Donovan Correctional Facility in San Diego County, where they were housed in separate units. Eric also spent some time at Pleasant Valley Prison in Coalinga, California.
Oh, so they didn't have them in the same prison?
No.
They were separated?
Yeah.
I don't know why they did that.
Yeah. So they won't talk to each other? Like,
they were already found guilty, you know?
Well, that's true. They were just...
Maybe they were planning an escape.
Maybe.
Right. You know, they had a deal.
Yeah, I guess they didn't trust them around another.
Together, yeah.
Together.
It was a one-time thing, though.
Yeah.
They're treating them like hardened criminals.
Yeah.
You're
right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yes, look, I get it. The way they killed their parents,
yeah.
It was horrors, especially the mom.
Yep.
But it wasn't for S&Gs either, though.
No.
If there's evidence and if there's cousins talking about it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel for them.
Has any of their friends ever talked about how their characters were? Like, saying, like, oh, yeah, he's a cool dude to hang out with, but he can be a real jackass at times. Like, you know what I'm trying to get at?
Yeah, but I don't know. Really, I don't know. That's just me. I feel for them in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I always did when the trial was going on. When they were described, like, what would happen to them?
Yeah.
I was all like, man.
They should have gone to prison since they murdered
the
parents, yeah. I'm not saying they shouldn't have gone.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So they've been sitting in there this whole time, not found guilty? Or they're guilty?
No, they were guilty.
Yeah, they're guilty.
Yeah, they were guilty.
On April 4th, 2018, Lyle was moved into the same housing unit as Eric, reuniting them for the first time since they began serving their sentences nearly 22 years earlier. The brothers burst into tears and hugged each other at their first meeting in the housing unit. The unit where they were housed is reserved for inmates who agreed to participate in education and rehabilitation programs without creating disruptions.
Well, yeah,
that's good for them.
They're getting their education in.
And they're with each other again?
Yeah. And they've been together since then?
I think so.
After that, they didn't separate them?
Again? No.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Can you write letters from prison to prison?
I think you can.
You can.
I think so.
You can?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. And you know what I read, though? I read that now they're going to try to get away with having mail delivered to them, like letters, because now they're going to have inmates with tablets, and they're just going to scan their letters and send it to them that way.
Well, that sucks.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Okay, so they're not like mail.
Yeah, because
like letters in the mail?
Like letters in the
mail. It'd be like email?
Well, that's what I was saying. I was like, well, might as well just do an email.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing that, but...
True.
I guess maybe this way they're monitoring monitoring.
Well, they read. Don't they open the letters anyways?
I think so.
Yeah.
All right, they read them.
I think they have to read the letters either way, just in case there's any hidden messages.
Morse code.
Come tomorrow. I'm escaping.
There's a little hole. Okay, so now we're done talking about their incarceration, so now we're going to talk about their appeals.
On February 27th, 1998, the California Court of Appeal upheld the brothers' murder convictions. And on May 28th, 1998, the Supreme Court of California declined to review the case, thus allowing the decision of the appellate court to stand. Both brothers filed habeas corpus petitions with the Supreme Court of California, which were denied in 1999. Having exhausted their appeal remedies in state court, they filed separate habeas corpus petitions in the United States District Court.
Okay.
Yeah, they're still trying.
They're trying, but I wonder what's keeping the Supreme Court to keep on denying them, yeah.
Maybe because they don't have any new evidence?
Well, with the lawyer alone, then that should be a retrial, I think. The lawyer messing with that guy?
Yeah.
Telling him to...
measure the notes or change the notes.
Straight justice.
What
does the
notes contain?
I don't know.
But whose lawyer was it that was...
Wait, come on. Say, I see it.
Huh?
Whose lawyer was asking to edit the notes?
Abramson, I think it's either Lyles or Eric's.
Do you think maybe he had something in there, maybe a little bit incriminating, saying that maybe it wasn't so much that about the abuse, but more because they just wanted to?
Well, maybe, because why would, yeah.
Because why would they edit if they had anything to do about the abuse? You know what I'm trying to get at?
Yeah.
So maybe in there somewhere, maybe they did get abused, so I'm not disputing that.
Yeah.
But like, maybe somewhere in there.
To make it more, like, to sound more worse?
Yeah, it made them look
worse.
To sound worse, yeah. Like, maybe they said something like, and yeah. They're going to be like, well, you can't say that because now you just implicated yourself even more.
Yeah.
Possibly. I asked him to edit.
Yeah, it could be.
But with the lawyer doing that, I would think that would be enough for a retrial.
Right?
Well, that too, yeah.
On March 4th, 2003, a magistrate judge recommended the denial of petitions and the district court adopted the recommendation. They then decided to appeal to the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. On September 7th, 2005, a three-judge panel denied both their habeas corpus petitions, although Judge Alex Kozinski stated that the trial judge changed many of the rulings during the two trials.
So that's not enough to
rehear
it?
The judge kept on changing rules.
Was he changing them on purpose?
I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I don't know. So they tried twice to appeal it?
They tried a lot of times.
Wow.
And they kept on getting denied.
You think maybe because it was not, maybe because they didn't have so much evidence, but maybe because of the way the killings were?
Probably the way they killed them.
Right?
Yeah. Like Ben said, premeditated.
Premeditated.
Yeah.
It was in a brutally manner.
Yeah.
We're done talking about their appeals, and now we're going to get into their marriages and interviews in prison.
On July 2nd, 1996, Lyle married Anna Erickson at a ceremony attended by Abramson and his aunt Martha Menendez and presided over by Judge Nancy Brown. They divorced on April 1st, 2001, after Erickson discovered that Lyle was allegedly cheating on her with another woman.
So even in prison, he's got a thing. Dang!
But I wonder if he thought it was a joke. Because on April 1st, April
4th! Right? She's joking. What's today? April
1st. It has to be a joke. Even in prison, they cheat.
Damn.
That's crazy.
I know, right?
Those weird fans.
Right.
Serial killers have. Yeah. It's kind of weird.
And they were even serial killers.
Yeah. In November 2003, Lyle married Rebecca Sneed at a ceremony in the visiting area of Mule Creek State Prison. They had known each other for around 10 years before their engagement. On June 12, 1999, Eric married Tammy Ruth Sackerman at Folsom State Prison in the prison waiting room. Tammy later stated our wedding cake was a Twinkie. We improvised. It was a wonderful ceremony until we had to leave. That was a very lonely night. In an October 2005 interview with ABC News, she described her relationship with Eric as something that I've dreamed about for a long time, and it was just something very special that I never thought I would have ever had.
Oh, their cake was a Twinkie.
Aw. Oh, okay, I got confused. Lyle was the one that cheated.
Cheap ass guy.
So the girl, Rebecca, was that the one he cheated on? Probably.
I don't know.
I bet the first one, Anna, was probably one of those fan girls, right?
Probably. Or maybe knew him when they were growing up.
Oh, that's true.
I don't know.
I think Rebecca's the one that he's known for 10 years.
Yeah.
And Anna was the one.
Yeah.
But how did she find out that he was cheating on her, though?
I don't know. How do you find out?
Yeah.
How do you even cheat in prison?
You're right.
Right?
You mail someone else. Or you write a letter to someone else.
He had a prison bin
valve. Right?
And this one, something that I've always dreamed of for a long time. So she's dreamed of a prison marriage for a long time.
Maybe with him, Ben. Maybe she always liked him.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know. But that's funny. That's true.
Oh, she described it was the relationship she had with him.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's true, though. I would be like,
Right.
I'm just going to be your girlfriend.
Yeah.
Okay, but it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised they didn't search the Twinkie. Could have hidden the key in there or something.
That right? is true. Some kind of razors.
Like when I watched The Longest Yard, the one with Adam Sandler.
Uh-huh.
And then that scene where Chris Rock gets that cake and he digs in there and there's shoes in it for Nelly's character.
Yeah.
And I'm all like, what? Okay. I was like, well, they allow cakes like that?
It's a movie.
It's a movie. It's a movie magic. Yeah. What would you call it?
Movie magic. Okay, guys. What's your all thoughts on this case?
That's a crazy case.
You cannot say crazy case. It's like I said before.
It's weird, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's just weird because they had the evidence, but they couldn't really
use it.
The tapes. They couldn't use the tapes. And the picture, the only thing that they had was the picture.
Yeah.
And they...
They weren't allowed to use it.
That.
All right. Oh.
I feel bad for them, but...
They did what they did.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, they were lucky enough that they didn't get the death penalty.
Well, yeah.
I mean, because I don't understand the whole prison stuff like what we do.
Oh, they hardly do the death penalty in California.
Oh, really? They're not like Texas over here?
I think they took it off.
In Texas, I think, too, or
no,
California?
In California.
Texas still has it, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Well, that's all for today's episode. Hope you all enjoyed this episode of the Four True Crime Idiots podcast. Please rate us on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify or wherever you listen to our podcast. And please follow us, the Four True Crime Idiots podcast, on all of our social media platforms. All of the links will be in the description. Until the next episode,
stay vigilant.
Stay safe.
Watch your surroundings.
Bye.
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 Adios.
Adios, amigos.